I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another Wednesday afternoon on the Progressive Radio Network. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green, and I'll be with you for the next hour talking to you about food and what's going on in the world in relation to food. And I also have a wonderful guest today that I'm so excited to introduce to you. Her name's Yonette Fleming, and she is the executive director of the Hattie Carthen Community Market, and also very instrumental, I think she's the vice president of the community garden in Stuyvesant Town and Bed-Stuy, and she is a real mover and a shaker, and she is just great. And she's going to come on later in the show, but she is an urban farmer who I met last month when I participated in NPR workshop down at the Green Space, and she was one of the presenters. She is not just an urban farmer, but she also raises chickens right there in Brooklyn. And the work that she's doing and the community organizing and the spirit that she is raising around food and food security and food policy is just inspirational. So I'll tell you more about her as we get closer to bringing her on. And before we do that, I want to share a couple things with you. Last weekend, I took a great course that I want to tell you all about. It was put out by a man named Dan Kittredge, who is the founder of a new nonprofit called Real Food Campaign. And these workshops he's running, is the nutrient-dense crops. And he is teaching about soil science. And I never really gave much thought to soil science before. You know, I've been gardening for many years, and I know about crop rotation, and I, you know, pay attention to that and try to rotate the crops around as best as I can, trying to make sure that I have crops in each row from a different family than was there the year before. And, you know, and understand that different vegetables pull from the soil different nutrients, and that by rotating the crops, you're not having the same plant pulling the same nutrients from the soil, so that you're balancing it. And that was very simple, and I really understood that. But what I didn't really think about is taking it to the next level. And a wonderful analogy that Dan shared with us was that when a mom-to-be is pregnant, the food that she eats determines the health of her child. And we all know that. We know that, you know, prenatally, how you take care of your unborn child when they are in utero affects every aspect of their life going forward. And it really is to everyone's advantage to feed your child healthy from the get-go. So it just makes sense that you would want to do that the same for a plant, that a plant can only be as full of nutrients as the soil it comes from. And so if your soil is depleted of its nutrients and its minerals, then the vegetable will also not be as full of nutrients. And when I first saw the name of the course, Nutrient Dense Crops, truthfully, my initial reaction was not positive, because I've been on so many cafeteria committees over the years, and they always talk about, you know, nutrient-based meal plans. And that's the kind of meal plan where, you know, you just want to make sure that the child gets the certain nutrients, and they're dividing up the food from being a whole food to just looking at the nutrients and making sure the child gets the right nutrients. And that's the problem where, you know, a handful of gummy bears is just as good as an orange because they both have the same amount of vitamin C. So we all know, everyone who's listening and follows me knows that that's not true. So it's really important looking at the whole food and the nutrients that are in a food. It's very hard to look at the nutrients independent of the other nutrients in it because they all partner with each other to make a whole food. And you never know what trace elements might be needed to get the most out of that vegetable. So, you know, when I first saw the name nutrient-dense crops, I thought it was going to be really looking at, you know, the individual parts of the plant and not really looking at the whole plant, and I was wrong. It really is about looking at your soil and building your soil up to be as nutrient-based and as strong and vibrant with as much vitality as possible so that when you're growing your vegetables have as much minerals and nutrient value as they are potentially able to have. And it was really interesting to find out that, you know, most vegetables don't live up to their potential, just like, you know, human beings. I mean, we only use a certain portion of our brain. We don't use our full potential, and that carries over into many different aspects of our being. And so the more that we can develop our own person to use as much of our abilities as possible and to live up to our greatest potential, we want to do that with the food we're eating as well. So this class is being given around the country in many different farms, and the course is the same course. So I took my first class up at Stone Barns, but there is another class, another series that's starting next month up at the Hawthorne Valley Farm, which is a great farm in Ghent, New York. And so if you miss one, you know, if I can't get to Stone Barns one day, I can, you know, sub a class up at Hawthorne Valley, which is really nice. And the course is very reasonable. And, you know, a lot of it was over my head. I mean, I was never a big chemistry type of person. Science was not my forte. I was an art student and, you know, went to art school, then, you know, went on and studied Waldorf education and, you know, ultimately became a Waldorf teacher. And so, you know, I'm academic, but science was never my forte. So a lot of this was really very technical for me and was challenging. But I like a good challenge, and I'm really, really excited to learn about the soil that I have in my property. He actually gave another really great example. He talked about, just as an experiment, putting some radioactive isotopes into one side of the farm, and that, I don't remember the time period, whether it was like an hour later or a day later, but they actually were able to pick up those radioactive isotopes over on the other side of the field. And that just shows you that the interconnectedness underneath the ground is all connected. You know, so if if your neighbor is dumping some pollution over next door to you, even if you are having an organic garden, you have to be very mindful of what's going on next door. You know, or if you're trying to have your organic garden over on one side of your property, but you're putting pesticides down in your lawn, your garden's not really so organic because those pesticides are just going to come right over. So it's really very fascinating to know how connected all the root systems and the underground life is under the plants, something we don't think of often. So anyway, I want to move on to my recipe because I do want to invite Yonette on soon. So the recipe I brought in to share with you today is a delicious four cheese lasagna, and I want to share it with you because during the holiday times, a lot of times you want to be able to make something that's a casserole type form and be able to make it ahead of time and be able to just pull it out and not have to be messing with being in the kitchen while your guests are there. So lasagna is great because you can do it, you know, ahead of time and then just have a nice salad with and some garlic bread and not have to be in the kitchen while you're trying to entertain. This is a four cheese lasagna, so my vegan friends out there, I'm sorry. You know, I actually do have a tofu lasagna recipe that I did not bring in with me today, and I promise I will bring that in another time. But a lot of this you can do and just substitute some of the non-dairy elements, and I'll talk about that as I go through it. Okay, so for the four cheese lasagna, first you want to make a really good tomato sauce. If you have the time to do that. If not, you want to invest in a really good jarred sauce. I use a little bit of a combination of each. I buy a good jarred sauce and then I doctor it a little bit. So I want some olive oil. I want an onion, some garlic. I use canned organic tomatoes that are diced. I use a jar of organic tomato sauce. I like the Muir Glen, but there's many different ones out there. Feel free to use whatever you love. Half a cup of dry white wine, a Chardonnay or a Pinot is good. Half a cup of fresh basil. Right now we're not in season for fresh basil, so if you want to use dried basil, that's okay. Or if you have some pesto in your freezer, you can just add a couple of tablespoons of pesto to the sauce as well. One red pepper diced, organic, of course. And then a quarter cup of fresh parsley. Okay? So you want to make the tomato sauce by sauteing in olive oil the onion and the garlic. And then when that starts to become translucent, add the red pepper to that. And saute it all until it's soft. Then you're going to add the white wine and the canned tomatoes and the tomato sauce, the jar of tomato sauce, the fresh basil or pesto, and some fresh parsley. And let that simmer for about 30 minutes or so. Just put it on the back burner at a low temperature. Cover it. And just every now and then, every few minutes, give it a stir. Okay, meanwhile, I want you to make the filling. And I use a cup of half and half, organic half and half. 1 2-pound container of organic ricotta cheese. 1 pound of shredded mozzarella cheese. Or you can use fresh mozzarella as well, 2 organic eggs, and a quarter cup of Romano and Parmesan cheese grated, mixed together. Okay? And then 1 box of organic whole wheat lasagna noodles. Now, the main thing that I want to share with you that a friend of mine turned me on to some 30 years ago, which really made a difference when I was making lasagna for 100 people at a time, that I don't cook the lasagna noodles. That's right. Do not cook the lasagna noodles. Can't be easier. Straight out of the box. But that is why I add some half and half to the ricotta cheese to make it more liquidy, more like a bechamel sauce. And I also use quite a bit of tomato sauce so that the lasagna noodles actually are cooking in the tomato sauce while you're baking it. All right. So that's the main difference in my lasagna. So you want to mix the cup of half and half with the ricotta cheese together with the 2 eggs. Okay, and just mix that together. You can add the Romano and Parmesan cheese into that too. But don't put the mozzarella cheese into that. Leave the grated mozzarella out. And then you're going to start layering. First, you want to put a good amount of sauce on the bottom of your lasagna pan. Okay, you know, a good amount because that's going to sit the first layer of noodles. Then you take the noodles right out of the box and lay them out into the lasagna pan. And unlike when you're making a lasagna where you're using cooked noodles, I actually just put the noodles next to each other. I don't overlap the noodles, okay, because I really want each of the noodles to cook in the sauce. So 1 layer of noodles. Then I put a nice layer of the ricotta half and half mixture on top of it. Then I put some more sauce on top of it and put some grated mozzarella cheese down. Then I do it again and repeat. Put the lasagna noodles again, the rest of the filling, meaning the ricotta cheese mixture, then some more tomato sauce, and some fresh mozzarella. And then I do one more layer of noodles. And I just put the noodles on and then cover the top noodles with a lot of tomato sauce and then the fresh mozzarella cheese. So the top layer does not have the ricotta cheese. And I cover it well with some tin foil, and I bake it at 350 for about 50 minutes. Actually, I bake it for an hour, but first you bake it covered for 50 minutes. Then you take the cover off, and you look at it. If it looks like you might need a little more sauce, you can add a little more sauce. And then bake it off for another 10 minutes so that the mozzarella cheese on top gets golden brown. And then just garnish the top of the casserole with some fresh grated parsley. And voila, that is it. You're ready to go. Delicious, easy. You know, it's like comfort food. It's just, you know, it's really a nice, warm Christmas dinner type dish. So that's my recipe that I want to share with you. One other thing before I bring my guest on is I want to share with you that this past Monday, I and my partner, Anne Rathkoff, were honored at an event by Sustainable Long Island out at the Ohika Castle on Long Island. And it was really wonderful. We were honored along with a gentleman from the Long Island Farmers Bureau. And it was just a really nice coming together of so many different organizations and people who have been supporting me over the years in the work that I do. And it was just really wonderful. And then yesterday, I did my annual Christmas event at Rufus King Park in Jamaica, Queens, where we fed about 400 people. And there were two Santas there making the rounds and giving gifts to all the children and to the parents as well, so they could put something underneath the tree for their children. And it is just more community work. And that is what my guest that I'm going to be bringing on today does. Yonette Fleming is a community organizer, and she is so integrated into her community, and she brings people together to do good work. And so let me just tell you a little bit about Yonette Fleming. She's a lifelong musician, and she's the founder of the Haiti Carthen Community Market. And the market is adjacent to the community garden in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. And the market sits on what was once a vacant dumping lot, and now it's the home of a vibrant market every Saturday. And if you go to the website of the Hattie Carthen Community Garden or Community Market, you can actually see pictures of before and after, and it's pretty amazing. You know, the farmer's market is just so cute. And it's been a revitalizing effort for that community. And she is also a community food educator. And this farmer's market is part of her larger mission to introduce healthy food into her community. And as an urban farmer, Yonette grew and distributed over 10,000 pounds of food this year, including 150 dozen free-range chickens. I'm sorry, free-range eggs this year alone. And she's also written a garden-based curriculum which she uses to teach 200 children a week in the garden. So it's just amazing. And she also gives Saturday cooking classes. So she's also, you know, a sister of mine, another person who loves being in the kitchen, loves sharing her passion of food with those that she teaches. So they cook and then they eat, and that's you know, a wonderful way of bringing people together. And also in her community organizing, she creates festivals, and she brings hundreds of people together into the garden and addresses issues such as food security, health disparities, and social inequalities that, you know, revolve around food issues. So this year she created a Women's Security Festival, which addressed issues of women's health, community health, and planetary health. And you can actually go to a website to see about that festival. It's the BedStuyWomenSecurity.com. Some of the other festivals she's responsible for was the Food Festival, which is a teaching festival that celebrated food from the African diaspora, an herb festival, and a pumpkin festival. So she's a real mover and a shaker. And as I said earlier, I met her when I was at the Green Space, and we just had such a wonderful connection that I knew I wanted to be able to bring her onto my show and share what she's doing with all of you. So, Yonette, are you there? Yonette?
Me, Bhavani.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well today.
Good. Good. Well, thank you for joining us today. I'm really excited to have you here. So I was telling everybody a bit about what you've been doing out there, and actually before you even start talking, I just wanted to share with them something I pulled off of the website about the women's food conference that you had.
Yeah.
Because I loved, I mean, it almost made me cry, this call to gather women. It was just such a beautiful, beautiful call to bring women together that I thought I'd read it. Is that okay with you?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so this is the call that Yonette put out to all the women in her community. We gather the women who know the power that women hold when we come together to dialogue, organize, and vision for the future of our earth. One of the most important acts in these times is to find the courage to be in the conversations that truly matter. We find our individual selves and our common purpose when we learn how to speak and listen to each other with respect, truth, and compassion. In this place, deep collaboration and beneficial partnership among women thrive. And it goes on and on, and it's just, should I read more?
That's fine.
We gather the women who hunger for the opportunity to be outside in nature. We gather the women who tend the soil and grow healthy food. We gather the women who protect the earth from overdevelopment and greed. We gather the women who envision a world where women have the same opportunities as men to own land. We gather the women who have committed to a life of serving others and mothering their communities back to health. We gather the women who drum, chant, and sing for justice. We gather the women who dare to take stand in their communities. We gather the women who long to heal from betrayal. We gather the women who yearn for deep, mutual, beneficial partnerships based on respect. We gather the women who are caregivers in our society. We gather the women who have suffered trauma to their wombs. We gather the grandmothers who raise their grandchildren. We gather the women who suffer abuse in silence. We gather the young maidens who struggle to retain their innocence. We gather the women whose voices have been suppressed as though they carry no wisdom. We gather the women who have become invisible because they don't fit the mainstream standards of beauty. It's just so beautiful. So beautiful, Yonette. Did you write that?
Yes.
It's beautiful. I'm so sorry I wasn't there. That's all I can say. I hope you do another one because I want to be there.
Yes, hopefully you'll be there next year.
Are you going to do it again next year?
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, where do I start? You're just such an inspiration. Why don't you start by telling us what inspired you to start the community farmers market?
Okay. I began to do my work in Bed-Stuy in 2003 when I joined the Hetty Carson Community Garden. And my main attraction there was to tend the herb garden and to get to know the herbs even better because I had done intense studying and learning with them for many years. So in 2003, I began to do the work of reconnecting back to the soil and noticed that, first of all, this wonderful garden, at the time that I joined, it was about 1.5 or so acres of land, was in this neighborhood that's classified as a fresh food desert. You may or may not know this classification. A little later, we're going to move into it. And so I wanted to share the opportunity with everyone that was around or that lived nearby and that was interested in reconnecting to have this deep reconnection to place. So for a few years, I started doing the work of educating, because I realized that although we were in a fresh food desert and so many groups had come in to do the work of food insecurity, to address health disparities, the people who actually lived here had no real knowledge or understanding. At least the community where I was had no real understanding of how this work affected them, or even that the work was about them. So I began educating and giving herbal workshops, et cetera, started doing classes on health disparities so that the gardeners would begin to see themselves in all of it and understand the important role that they have as stewards of the land in an urban environment.
Mm-hmm.
So with that sort of focus, it was really about health, healthy food, food as medicine, because that had been my concentration of study for a long time. So there was this lot that was behind the garden, and I would compare it to what you were saying, the point that you were making a little bit before I got on the call, of how what you do next door is really important to you in terms of chemical fertilizers, or even social behaviors, that we are all affected and we are all connected. So we would have all of our wonderful celebrations in the garden, and there was this piece of land that was directly behind the garden, separated by a fence, where neighborhood developers would dump all sorts of what we conceive of as trash, everything from soup to nuts, so from carcasses to boilers to everything that you can conceive of as trash, old furniture, appliances, et cetera, et cetera. And every time I would walk around that area, I would get this sort of draw from the trees that lived on that land. And I just knew that I just wanted to transform what was happening there into a healthy, beautiful scenario, and to watch that transformation happen and affect people. So I went out to get the jurisdiction for the lot. During the initial struggle to get the lot back into the jurisdiction of the garden so that it could be used for the benefit of the community, there were many people who thought that that was absolutely impossible to do that, that at this time when our neighborhood was gentrifying at a phenomenal rate, that most naturally that land would be absorbed by developers or for some other sort of use. But I was so sure that with good intentions and with our love for land and our experience of working with land, that this project was doable. So I went forward, and within 6 or so months, I was able to get the permission to begin cleaning the lot for use by the community. So really, this farmer's market is really a solution to the issue of food insecurity in Bedford-Stuyvesant. It is a viable place for food justice people to gather, to learn from each other, to celebrate, to organize. Yes.
Now, do you grow vegetables there as well, or that's just for the market?
So the piece of land that was reclaimed is where I now house 2 chicken coops, a children's garden, a learning garden, clay oven, the cob oven, and 8 large plots where people can come and pick their own food on Saturdays if they wanted to pick and purchase real fresh food right off the plants. They have that option in this wonderful market.
And who tends to that garden?
At the moment, I am the resident farmer tending plots, managing the chicken coop and looking over the chemistry of our community waste processes that we have. We also have a process in place on market day where community residents are able to come in with their compost from home and drop it off into our very large 3-ton bins. I manage all of those sorts of farming technologies so that our project can be successful.
You must have help. you
yes,
must have help. So
lots of help.
Good.
On every level. Help with people who care about urban agriculture and wish to see our project advance. Help like you, people who take the word out about the project so that it can touch the hearts of other people. Lots of volunteers who come forward every time I make those calls. Like the woman security call, there are different calls.
Right, right.
That I make to touch the hearts of tree people, of people who are interested in fungi realm, people who are interested in the herbs. I make those calls and ask them to come out to join us. In the experience of building and working together, reconnecting.
It's so great. So great what you're doing. So are the vegetables that are sold in the market mostly ones that are grown by the people in the community garden, or do you have farmers coming in from, you know, upstate and Westchester, Long Island, whatever, bringing in produce as well?
Remember that the community garden has been around for at least 20-something years or so, over 2 decades. So in those gardens, we have 43 members on the books who have plots and who are subsidizing their food budget at home by growing their own fresh vegetables. So that's 43 families that the garden serves. Within that garden, I have a number of plots that are dedicated to intensive growing for market. I also have large plots in the greenhouse. There's a community greenhouse that we built about 3 years or so ago to help us to extend the season. So there are those plots. So those foods are super organic. They never get touched by anything from the outside. And then we have the 8 plots that are growing in the market and about 4 other plots that grow in the children's garden, pyramid plots that we grow on. So on top of that, we also encourage and host a farmers cooperative from Pennsylvania that consists of about 83 or so farmers from Pennsylvania County, Pennsylvania State, I'm sorry. And so they bring in additional foods in addition to the foods that are grown right on the farm where people can see them in their natural environment.
Right. Are those also organic?
Absolutely organic, yes.
Great. So it's all organic.
Yes.
That's great because, you know, out by me there's only one farmer's market in Port Washington that's actually all organic. A lot
yeah.
of the other farmer's markets, you know, you would think that they'd be organic, but they're not, you know, and it's disturbing to me. You know, I would, you know, if I'm going to go to a farmer's market, I want to make sure it's organic, and I think a lot of people are misled. They think that just because they go to a farmer's market, it means it's organic, and it's not.
Well, I want to share while we're at this gate or this bridge, I want to share that it just really depends on what you mean by organic. To a small-scale farmer, who does not spray, use pesticides, chemical fertilizers on their plant, but cannot afford the certification of organic. I certainly understand what that is about as a small-scale farmer myself.
Right.
However, what I do want to say is that of utmost importance to me is that the food is not chemically treated, but that it is also local.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis of the market is really the locality of foods.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, the reason the market is now charting new territory that will engage urban farmers in growing more food in urban settings so that we can reduce the carbon footprint on those miles, those transportation miles.
Right.
And really bring about the full understanding of growing in urban cities. So I understand your concerns about the organic classification, however.
No, well, I thank you for clarifying that. I'm not so worried about the classification either. I mean, the importance is that you know the farmer, and when you ask, you know, they will tell you honestly, do they use chemical fertilizers or not? And that's what I'm more talking about.
Right. So in my market rules, because every market has rules, I don't stipulate that the farm has to have the organic USDA classification. What I do stipulate, though, and I have the farmers sign off on, is that they are not using these chemical additives or compounds, and especially that they are not spraying the fruit trees.
Right. Well, great. I agree with that 100%. And before we go on any more, we need to take a two-minute break.
Yes.
Just to take a break.
Sure.
So get a drink of water, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential, and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune in to Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down, or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah, yeah, man, yeah, yeah.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Bhavani at the Progressive Radio Network on IE Green with Bhavani. And we're recording live, so if you have any questions for myself or Yonette, who is my guest today, please give us a call at 888-874-4888. Hi,
Yonette. Hi.
So one of the things that you're involved in is education and teaching children about gardening and, incorporating the curriculum that they need to learn into the garden. Can you tell us how you're doing that? I mean, you say you have 200 kids come through the garden a week. Is that true? Wow.
So in all of this building and mapping the needs and the assets of my community, I realized that we really, in order to do this work of reconnecting successfully, we really need to begin reconnecting our children back to the earth. So in other words, if we examine the way the children learn, the majority of their time is spent inside of walls, learning concepts that are needed for life, but that are also geared towards being productive citizens of the society.
Mm-hmm.
So in conjuring up any green future for ourselves, and we certainly are at a time where we are realizing that the future of the earth is green, it behooves us as adults to somehow equip the children to be able to live a meaningful, productive life, a life that maximizes their human potential. This potential, what we call human nature, is really tied to nature and the understandings of nature. So at some point in my evolution and in my work, I realized that on top of talking with the old people about what their life was about or their understandings, on top of employing and working with teenagers in the market and on the farm, that I needed somehow to organize my work in such a way where I was affecting children between the ages of 0 to 7 who are in their impressionable years, who everything that we teach or show to them during this period of their lives, they will somehow incorporate into their fuller lives.
Mm-hmm.
So with that understanding, I set out to make partnerships with educational organizations. I had already been working in education, period, of adults. I have worked with college students around food education and food as medicine or phytomedicine. And I've also done a lot of work with the seniors and engaging them in oral histories to talk about their lives, most in the South,
mm-hmm.
And to narrate the sharecropping experience so that we incorporate and remember those in our work. So I went in to meet and network with a neighborhood charter school, Asima, who was a charter school that is in our neighborhood and have great ideas about holistic learning and about cultivating the whole child.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to work together to have all of our pre-K, K, and first graders bus to the garden on a weekly basis. So on Thursday and on Friday, I'm working with the children all day in the garden. We move from the seed to working with seed in our hoop house so that they actually are able to retain the information at a higher level by actually doing and being involved in it. Then they get to work with the transplants once the seeds have sprouted and they're now seedlings. We get to put them in the earth together. And then by the time that they are going off to their summer vacation, we get to harvest and eat some of the foods that we have planted together.
Mm-hmm.
The children also learn about soil, the health of the soil, that no soil is created equal. We do lots of observations from mm-hmm. different soils and look at the living organisms that are there. We work with binoculars to identify them and to talk about the roles that they play in the heap mm-hmm. decomposition. So it's really a beautiful, rounded, cyclical experience that I have with the children. They get a chance to talk openly outside. They get a chance to listen to the birds and observe the noises, the natural noises, beyond police cars or sirens. They get a chance to smell the greens, to observe the life cycle and all of the seasonal changes that they would not otherwise be able to do except for on TV or National Geographic or so. What we also find is that many of the children had never seen animals, had never visited farms, had never had this type of rich life experience. So we are doing this work organically with the young children in our community.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that that has affected their food choices and the food they're eating? And have their parents embraced this education and brought it into their homes?
So what we try to do is with the gardening classes, the parents are able to come out on the bus trips with the children. If they decided they wanted to study worms that day with us, they would come out. And our recipes and our healthy food information is also going back to the Parents Coordinators Committee and back into the homes.
Mm-hmm.
We also find that the children are expressing because it's not a rush environment, so it's they're really operating at nature's pace, and it's the only rushing is getting off the bus and getting back on.
Right, right.
So they're understanding time and valuing nature in a much different way. In terms of behaviors, a lot of modifications because our evaluation was basically on certain in certain fields and categories that we would look at, modes of communication, physical aggression, like certain targeted categories mm-hmm. of measuring. This and now the children actually have some idea about botany. When they came, they didn't know whether a grape was a root part of the plant or where to look for it or is it high or is it low. They had no idea of how beans grew and where to look for that on a plant. So all of those understandings are becoming much clearer to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, humans learn through repetition. So we are looking forward to deepening our connection through repetition.
Right. And do the children get to taste some of the vegetables?
Yes, we have cooking classes at the end, yes, where we harvest and eat.
Great. Great. I find that's, you know, crucial, you know, to get it in their mouth because it's one of the ways where positive peer pressure can really influence the kids. You know, if they're used to not saying they want to try it or saying no to vegetables, when they see other kids eating it and liking it, they're much more likely to want to try it.
Yes.
Well, that's great. And you also do cooking classes for older people as well, right?
Yes, I do the intergenerational classes. Because a part of my classes are of stories, So say, for example, when I was doing my preserving the harvest, a part of that class was asking people to close their eyes and remember walking through their grandmother's or their great-grandmother's larder or pantry and going through the smells and feeling all of that and then comparing that to what we now have in our kitchens. So there's a lot of spatial work happening also to reinforce this connection around food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On your website, I read a really great little story about where actually are you from?
I was born in Guyana, South America.
Okay, so you were telling, there was a story of what a typical dowry was, you know, when a young girl got married in your country.
Yes.
They were actually given eggs, right?
Yes.
You want to share that? I loved that.
Yeah. Before I actually got my chickens, I spent about a year chronicling folkloric chicken help from my grandmother, who is 99.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And so her memory of, like, those days is much clearer than, like, what happened 5 minutes ago.
Sure.
So I really enjoy that and work with that and use that as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
That it's so special. So I spent about a year chronicling the times of my grandmother's and her interaction with her chicken and her chickens. And she also had ducks. And then there's so much. She also baked lots of bread. She was a big baker. Like, we never bought bread. Like, there was no such thing as, like,
mm-hmm.
buying bread or pastries or any such thing. So she told me the story of how the animals are a part of our wealth. Especially in her day. And so that this gifting would go on from mother to daughter with fertilized chicken eggs, which would eventually grow into her coop and part of her livelihood and a part of her raising livestock and, deriving, some monies from that activity.
Mm-hmm.
That was really profound to me because when we received the gift from Heifer, of being able to build a chicken coop, like that was the parallel that was in front of my mind, in the forefront of my mind was like, wow, this is like seeding into, your farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is that how you got your funding through the Heifer Foundation?
So the my first chicken coop was funded through a large grant that Just Food received, to promote livestock farming in New York City, and that came from Heifer.
Mm-hmm.
Just Food administrated the grant and the community organizing aspect of getting the coop up and getting people in to build and looking at laws and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, when you do your cooking classes, do you actually have a kitchen or an indoor kitchen, or are you doing outdoor kitchen space at the garden?
So for as long as I've done food advocacy work, I've always thrown up my table in the middle of a project, in the middle of unbelievable places, and just took out my burner and just started cooking of the fresh food.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the food educators are just really doing this guerrilla work by just moving into the neighborhoods and saying, look, here's how we do it. Let's get it together. Let's talk about food and just randomly start cooking. So that work is being done in the same way.
Oh, great. That's good because that's always been a deterrent for being able to get anything done, trying to go through the health department. And, when I looked to get a kitchen going, I think I needed 5 sinks. I needed drains in the floor. I mean, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I never went forward with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had to work around it as well.
Yeah.
So you have been doing the chickens for about how many years now?
So the chickens are in their first year on the farm. Yeah, because remember, this is reclaimed land that the chicken coops are on.
Right. But this year was the first year, and how many dozen eggs did you
150.
Give? Wow.
Yeah, 150 dozen.
That's great.
Yeah, and then that is from, like, pulling from our inventory. That's not like somebody stops by and I say, oh, you know, try some fresh eggs or, yeah.
Wow, that's just amazing. Amazing. When we were together in the green space, there was a chicken club from this school in the Bronx. And
yeah.
These kids had this chicken club, and it was like everybody's favorite thing to do, to be part of the chicken club. And, you know, raising chickens is just such a amazing thing, and to be doing it in an urban environment is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. So do you see any bees in your future at the farm?
Yeah. They are on my rooftop.
Oh, you already have them?
Yeah. This is the first year. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, I hope to see chickens and bees in my future out at my property as well.
Yeah.
You know, just it just feels right. Just seems like that's the trend, and that's where we all have to go if we want to, you know, teach about food and growing food and being more sustainable. We have to bring those things back closer to the home.
Yeah. So at the moment, the market is looking for alternative farm sites. Where we could definitely get into more bees and herbs for other ventures, other community ventures for the market. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if anybody out there has some extra land, Yonette, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, please.
Because I'm sure donations are also welcome, are they not?
Yes, they always are.
So,
and what I wanted to make an announcement about was the Halloween fire that happened in the market. So in the midst of all of this good work, there's always backlash, and there's always other energies that are destroying. So on Halloween night, we basically lost our shed in the market. It was burnt. The fire department deemed it to be arson.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and in that shed, there was about $15,000 worth of market equipment. You can read all about the story. It was in the Daily News and several newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But if the listening audience could please log on to hattiecartancommunity market, all one word, .com, HattieCarsonCommunityMarket.com. I know it's a long one, but if you can log in there or just put Hattie Carson Community Garden or just Google that or the market or my name even, Yonette Fleming, and you will be able to log into our website, assist us in any way possible. We are calling out to people who understand the importance of urban agriculture, people who understand what it means to grow your own food, to connect young children and seniors, to have a safe place for women to heal themselves and to understand flora and fauna. Please support us in any way possible.
Great. Well, you know what? I will continue to put that out there.
Okay.
We're out of time. Unfortunately,
I want to say thanks to you for just having me on, sharing this information.
Oh, you're so welcome. God bless you, and keep up the good work, and we'll definitely connect some more, okay? Have a great day.